Welcome to the Radio Facts Radio Show, your online information station. My name is Kevin Ross, and I'm your host for the show. First and foremost, I want to thank over 40,000 listeners for the first two shows worldwide. We really appreciate your support. This week, we talk about somebody's watching you. Are you comfortable knowing that you are being spied on by your tech devices? Former radio DJ Leon Isaac Kennedy is suing for a 30-year-old porn tape. Why can't black artists make conscious songs? Is it the artist, radio, or the label? How do gospel industry artists serve their demanding audience? Promotional sabotage, how new artists destroy their projects before they even leave the ground. Finally, low-power FMs and bandwidth signals. Are you ready to own your own station? This and a lot more on the Radio Facts Radio Show.
You're listening to Radio Facts Radio Show, brought to you by RadioFacts.com, your online information station.
Advertise on the Radio Facts Radio Show and RadioFacts.com. We'll have a professional voiceover artist voice your product and send it to you for approval before adding it to the show. Contact staff at RadioFacts.com for more information.
Everyone calls it a jam. I have my own marketing and management firm, the Lewis Cortez Group, and I'm a former programmer.
I'm the poetess from Los Angeles.
I'm a radio producer and podcast.
I'm Dwayne McClary. I'm a consultant to Epic Records, Def Jam Records, Cash Money Records, and, amongst others. And previously I was at MCA Records, Geffen Records, and Universal Motown Records.
Man, I'm Paul Porter, old radio head from Boston, New York, D.C., worked at BET, worked at different places, and now I'm a rebel with a different cause and have a website, rebrehab.com.
All right, so let's talk about, did you guys get the piece on technology spying on us?
Yeah.
There was a story on last week on TV, on a news channel, and apparently they're doing more, they're talking more about it overseas than they are over here, but basically they were saying that our new cars and technology is spying on us. It knows where we're going, it knows what we're doing, it knows, you know, what we're listening to, you know, who we talk to, our text messages. Does that make you uncomfortable in any way?
I feel like, it's a mess. I mean, because I've seen a couple of television programs that have focused on this. What's his name? Jesse Ventura and his conspiracy shows and shows about staying off the grid. So this technology has been into play for several years now, maybe even a decade or so. But I kind of feel personally, I'm not really doing anything that they would be interested in. So, I mean, it's going to happen anyway, whether I know it or not. So,
right.
I don't feel they'll have any particular interest in what I'm doing, personally.
Yeah, I'm not concerned with it at all, to be honest with you. You know, I think people find what they want if they want to find you anyway. If you're doing something illegal, we've had more than enough stuff in years have gone by to, catch up to people.
Right. I mean, it's like working for, you know, in corporate America, your phone calls and your emails are both being monitored. So it's no different than that. So it's just a matter of, you know, if you're doing anything that's not objectionable or not illegal or whatever the case is, you know, it's just a sign of the times. It's just what we are in this whole digital era.
I don't know if I'm as concerned about the fact that, you know, it's whether or not you're doing something illegal as much as I am about kids and older people and hackers.
No, I was just going to say, I personally am kind of like a conspiracy theorist. I watch a lot of documentaries and I'm really, really into that kind of stuff. And unfortunately, I believe that even if you turn off the location finders on your phone, your phone can actually be powered down and it is still traceable. Say, for example, my fiance lost his iPhone not too long ago. And even though the phone may have been powered off, we were still able to trace the phone and know that it was actually taken from where it was, where he left it. And we watched it travel from house to house and place to place. So
wow.
I do think that at the end of the day, Yeah, and it's really scary, too. But at the end of the day, we're dealing with the United States, which we're dealing with government. We're dealing with people that are very powerful in very powerful positions. And I just don't think for one minute that it just landed that way. You know, they have their reasons for doing what they do. And they have access to all kinds of information and personal information that, you know, whether it be our computers, whether it be our cell phones, anything else that may have a GPS chip in it, they're going to, you know, they're listening. And unfortunately, now it's not even considered a conspiracy because they're telling you, yeah, we're listening to you. We're watching you. So it just is what it is.
And they're making you pay for it. I mean, you know, services like the tracking services in your car, you know, they use that information.
Right.
And then you have to pay a monthly fee. They're trying to pass legislation where they have to disclose, you know, what they're doing with your information, but they're having a really hard time doing that. So I think overall, most people probably feel like it's not a big deal. But I have friends who are conspiracy theorists, like you say, Jamila, that, you know, take it to another level. After a while, you kind of wonder if they're okay because they, you know, so you don't want to cross over that far. But this is like the first thing they talk about, you know, is that we're being spied on. So I thought that was an interesting subject.
Let me add a final point to that is that, you know, just think about it. It can also work to your advantage. As Jamila just said, her fiance's iPhone just, you know, was lost and they were able to track it. So where it can also be used as a device to spy against us, it could also be an ally to help us find and locate things.
Right.
So it's kind of like how you look at it. You know, you can use it to your advantage or it can be used against you. It's just something that, you know, it could work either way.
That's true.
That is true, because if you think about it, a lot of crimes are solved that way, too.
Exactly.
My thing is, though, as a conspiracy, I'm sorry, my last thing on this, as a conspiracy theorist, my thing is, just don't trace me unless you ask my permission. But since I'm a U.S. citizen, I don't have any say-so, so there you have it.
Right, pretty much. Leon Isaac Kennedy is suing Ebony Magazine in 2014 for saying that, I guess basically for ruining his reputation, saying that he released the porn tape of Jane Kennedy years ago, and it ruined his career, basically. Now, I would think that the statute of limitations would be up, because that was like, what, in the 80s? That tape?
Right.
That tape got out. And I don't know how he is able to sue. Apparently, there must be some way he's doing it, because a lawyer wouldn't take the case, of course, if he couldn't get something out of it. But
is he talking about his now career as a minister? Because he's, even though they were the it couple back in the 80s, he's a minister now.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Is he talking about ruining his now career?
Yeah, he's ordained minister. Yeah,
I didn't know that.
What it is, it's like, okay, yeah, you did that and it's unfortunate, but you know, that's the thing. That's the thing about a lot of, I'm not gonna say ministers, but people in certain situations, you have to be very careful about what you may have done coming up, mm-hmm. because it's out there,
right.
And you can't do anything about it. It's just a part of your past.
That's exactly what I thought. I mean, now that he's a minister, I would think that chapter of his life is something that he's not trying to relive or go back to. I mean, that chapter, that book in his life is closed, so he's moved on before, you know, he's moved on ahead of that. And I mean, it sounds to me like he's just trying to grab his last minute or some last second celebrity gusto or make some money on it. I mean, because think about it. If that sex tape had done for his career what the sex tape did for Kim Kardashian's career, he would be applauding and thanking Ebony for leaking it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm with you on that one.
Man, he'd be on the Preachers of L.A. What I'm thinking is that is he suing because he was in the movie or because it got out? Because it's like, if he did the movie, it doesn't matter if it got out.
Ebony is not the only publication.
Yeah.
Or that everybody knew about that when that came out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So why single out Ebony when that has probably been leaked through so many outlets that, you know, so I think there may be some kind of agenda there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, who has the most money? That's who you sue.
Well, that absolutely destroyed Jane, so she quickly disappeared.
Yeah, and Jane's not complaining. And Jane's not complaining about it.
And that's my point. You know, F your career, but look what it did to Jane Kennedy. Kennedy's, who was America's sweetheart. You were a black exploitation actor. She was a superstar, the first black female to do what she did. And I believe he did leak the tape because right. He was bitter and tried to ruin her career, which he did.
Yeah, the last time I saw her, she was on like a public access channel planting flowers. And
they did a Life After special on her on TV One.
Did they talk about that?
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
no.
Wow.
No, I don't think they did.
I'm trying to remember. I don't think they do. I agree. I don't think they do talk about it. Right.
Now, Paul did a story, moving on to the next thing. Paul did a story in RapRehab.com about Pussy Riot. I'm still trying to figure out how they get airplay with that name, but I guess in Europe it's a bit different. But Pussy Riot is more of a political...
Pussy is just a cat.
What's that?
Right.
I said, Pussy is just a cat.
They play pussy cat dolls, right?
Right.
So anyway...
In Europe, they call it what it is.
So, Paul, tell us about your story. I read it, but I want you to tell us about it and the general...
The general theme of the story is basically how, you know, art and artists and music can be so much more than what it is today. It can be political. It can lead drives. It has a sense of power when content works. It can move masses. And we've sort of went away from, you know, political stances in music. And it just shows the power of certain artists. You know, it mentions Macklemore in the article about Same Love and, you know, this dress for the LGBT community. And, you know, it's basically tying in to say how come we don't use, you know, the art form for more than just dancing and booming and bamming and, you know, the consistency that we all see now.
You're listening to Radio Facts Radio Show, brought to you by RadioFacts.com, your online information station.
Well, I don't know if we would hear the lyrics anyway, because if it has a nice beat, you know, it appears that...
I know, right?
That's mostly what we're concerned with. But it, yeah,
that's number one.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, let me hear the beat first.
Gonna catch you.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, but the power is if you can have the same thing happen. You know, we always talk about, you know, rap versus hip-hop and, you know, how the art form has moved in that way in terms of content. And nobody complained about songs that were conscious or made you think or made you pump your fist.
But if, you know
because,
what? Go ahead. No, I would say we're definitely in a different time because... The pop artists can get away with that. The Lady Gaga's, all those folks, Macklemore, whatever. But our music is to dumb us down. And we can't, we ourselves look down on conscious rappers. We don't,
why do you think that? I don't think that's true. I just don't think we give them a voice.
Because one, yeah, that's true. But one, listen to the radio. Radio is programmed. So that's all they're hearing on the radio. And, I mean, there is access on the Internet, but if they're hearing listening to the radio all the time and they're only playing certain artists or certain artists are being marketed to the masses, then they're kind of programmed to like that.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. And that's the point.
Here's what I think. I think that as an artist, before you even get to radio, before it even gets to the public, as an artist, you decide what you're going to spit out when you get in that booth. You decide if you're trying to make a record to get some women, get some booty shaking, or if you want to just have a nice beat, or if it wants to be self-serving, or if you want to have a conscience and spread a message, or if you want to start a movement. It's your choice when you go in that booth and you record your project. So I think it actually starts there. And unfortunately, I don't think we have a whole, I'm not going to say we don't have any, but we don't have a whole lot of artists that care about the message and the people more so than making the money and getting the fame and things like that. To me, that is their main focus.
Well, you don't think that's a conscious label decision?
I'm going to tell you what I say about that. And I said this a long time ago when music started to change. And in my mind, it really changed more for like, you know, let me just say this. When music started to change, the label should have had a responsibility years ago to say, you know what? I hear what you just put on my desk, but this is what I'm looking for, or this is what I'd rather you have, or be a part of that process instead of just taking something and going, oh yeah, that'll sell, regardless of what it is, even if it's damaging to your, you know, damaging to your community, if it degrades women, if it talks down on black men, they're just trying to make the money. So nobody has a conscience, from the artist to the record label, the executive, where's the conscience?
Hmm. But when you say they make a conscious decision, some of these rappers actually are college educated. So some of them, I think, know better. So, but they don't because they feel that they have to make a certain kind of song to make it in the business.
And they may feel that way, but it's still their decision to do it. You could actually, yes, that's the easy way to get your records. If you have a hot beat and you know, got the right producer, all of that, yeah, we know that's going to make you some money. But what about taking the hard road and educating some people and starting a movement and making a difference? That takes a little more effort. You might not make as much money up front, but you know you're working for purpose.
Why is it when the pop artists, like with the Pussy Riots and all those, when they make a statement, it makes an impact? But when we make a statement, because there are artists out there making statements, it doesn't make as much of an impact.
That falls on the buyer. That falls on the public.
Right.
Because we're not trying to hear that. It's like I said, we want to hear the beat. You know,
I don't believe
we want to be entertained.
How many conscious records do you hear? Name some of these records you're talking about.
Educated.
Well, you know what?
Tell me how many of these records you hear.
Well, let me say this before I answer that. You have, when there is an element of just being black that goes into that too. It's like when you deal with the stuff that you deal with all week long. You know, you work. Hopefully, you know, you face racism every day. You know, by the time the weekend hits, you want to have a good time. So I don't really think that a lot of people are conscious. I think the public certainly plays a part in that too. If they weren't buying it, and if they weren't dancing to it, and if they weren't...
But they're not buying it. Numbers have been going down for years.
People really want to be entertained above being educated when it comes to music and their favorite artists and radio and television.
Yeah.
All I say is balance. That's all I ask for is balance.
Right.
Okay, let's have a little balance.
Well, let me give you some balance. Tyrese did a video. I don't know if you guys saw that. I put the link in the notes I sent you. He's done a couple of videos over the last couple of weeks, but it was basically about haters and having, I hate that word, haters, but it was about haters and having clarity and balance and understanding what haters are. So he was saying something, I don't know if you guys had a chance to check it out, that was definitely positive. Unfortunately, it wasn't on record, but these days I'm thinking that artists may have even more of an impact with their social media than they do on with their music. So would it be okay if they did the music that they do the way they do it, but was conscious on social media?
I think it'll help, but I just think that radio has to have some type of balance, because I go around the country talking to these kids, and they're not even listening to words. We're in a visual medium now.
Right.
You know, if the video's not popping, then they don't even get to the lyrics. You can tell how something's shot if it's going to make it these days. I mean, visuals are important. They're more important than the substance of the song, it seems like.
Well, why do you think white kids appreciate it? When you look at white kids, why do you think they appreciate it? Do you think that their impression is, you know, they look at these dumb whatevers, or that they actually like it like black kids do?
I think it's more entertainment for them. That's how gangster was. They don't have it at their bus stop. They don't have it at their train station. In some cases they do, but they're not connected to jail and prisons like we are.
Yeah.
So when we hear that in rhymes, we know we got Uncle Benny who's doing time, or Ray Ray just got busted. It's a whole different fictional world of hip-hop for them. And for us, young black kids is more of a reality.
You're listening to Radio Facts Radio Show, brought to you by RadioFacts.com, your online information station.
But then I'm saying, why do they appreciate
it? I'll chime in on that question first. I just think at the end of the day, we have the most, we have everything that, and I'm just unfortunately going to use the word they, we have everything that they want, they like. I think they appreciate it because it's black music, and black music is just that good that it transcends color, you know, it transcends race, transcends across generations. So I think, and really I say that based on looking at different formats. If you look at hip-hop, the white version of hip-hop is called THR Rhythmic. That's a whole format. It's nothing but hip-hop with a white presentation. If you look at NAC Smooth Jazz, it's nothing but Urban AC with a white presentation. It's like they love what we do so much, so, you know, I don't know why.
But don't you think rhythmic is more now dance and up-tempo and 120 beats a minute compared to urban?
Yeah, it's
like the pop stations are running away from some of the artists that made them popular. And if we can't see...
Now it is.
Yeah, if you can't see that if the game is changing now to dance and high energy, and when you talk to 14 and 15-year-old kids, they're not in the same zone that, you know, the 35-year-old is when it comes to hip-hop. They think hip-hop is, something else.
That's true, but just think of how the CHR Rhythmic format came about. It was basically, the basis of it was hip-hop with a white presentation, with a white job.
That's because they wanted advertising.
We go back to the 80s when MCA had 8 out of the top 10 records from the urban department that were urban, you know, R&B, Bobby Brown, New Edition, all claiming top 40 radio. And that doesn't happen anymore.
Well, EDM is huge, so Rhythmic has to find a way to... I think you're right. It's like the hip-hop may be losing its appeal because EDM is so huge right now. So they're trying to find a way to bridge the gap between what they've been playing and that. And black artists are not going to do that kind of music, for the most part, unless it's mixed by the label. Another question I have is... gospel artists. Why is it that gospel artists, we talk about conspiracy theories, and we talk about music on the radio. How is it that gospel artists are able to maintain and keep things going as they have been over the years? You don't hear a lot about gospel artists being on drugs, even though some of them may be. You don't hear a lot of scandal about gospel artists. How is it that that format is able to maintain while everything else continues to change?
I mean, they have a strong base.
Their audience demands that they stay the same. Is that what you're saying?
What do you mean demand they stay the same?
I'm saying that the people who listen to gospel will not accept any derivatives of what's on the radio or what they're accustomed to.
I agree with what Camilla said. I don't know if you guys heard it, but she said a smaller sector of...
Yeah, it's definitely a smaller sector. And let me just say this, unfortunately, yes. On the gospel side, you have people who do drugs, people who cheat on their wives.
Absolutely.
You know, all of that. It's a smaller sector, so first of all, the general public doesn't care as much. But you are absolutely correct, too, Kevin, in saying that some things are just not acceptable when it comes to the general public for gospel. Mm-hmm. For example, if you look at some of the gospel artists, I'm not even going to name any names, but some of them who may have come from the secular side or who may have, who didn't come up in church, okay? Mm-hmm. So they don't know how to necessarily appeal to the church crowd. They'll sit there and they'll look at you and they won't buy your records and they won't clap their hands and they won't stand up and cheer you on. And I know an artist who actually used to get booed, who actually went on to be a very successful gospel group that I'm not going to name, but they used to get booed because their cleavage was out or they just, you know, had on too much whatever. So I think that, one, there is a boundary for the general public who purchases gospel music. They're only going to accept so much. Mm-hmm. But in terms of gospel artists who do the same thing the secular artists do, meaning they're human, they live their life, they make mistakes, they, you know, they trip up. it's just not as big of a sector, so the general public would rather have the more newsworthy story. They'd rather cover Lil Wayne, or they'd rather cover, you know, somebody like Kanye West as opposed to someone else.
You can say that about Christian rap, too. Christian rap is doing well. They're working all over the country, all over world, and having sellout shows, but they go so far under the radar. That Bizzle got so much play off of that response to Macklemore's Same Love. He's also gotten death threats, but I did a bunch of radio shows, conservative talk shows, that are all supporting him, and it's a different market out there, and I think a lot of folks have to understand that there's other ways to survive instead of the mainstream, where some of those gospel artists are more successful financially and tour-wise. It's a smaller market, but they're supportive.
So then that goes back
I don't know if you guys are... Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I don't know if you guys are familiar with Reach Records, based here in Atlanta. I mean, they have a whole roster of talent that do extremely well. Lecrae and Menio, all those guys, they sell out shows, and they're moving products, and they don't have any radio play.
So the next...
No video support, none of that.
You're listening to Radio Facts Radio Show, brought to you by RadioFacts.com, your online information station.
No, I went out with Ben Washer and Lecrae. They invited me up to Newark for Gospel Fest. And, you know, I know a couple of guys on their roster. That label's doing incredibly. It's, you know, self-serving. It tours guys like Fizzle. It's a new day out there, and I love to see folks carving out a business.
But then doesn't that kind of contradict what we talked about earlier then? It's like it's not necessarily on the label to approve or reject certain artists, because the audience ultimately is the one who, or the ones who approve or disapprove of the.
No, but it is in mainstream radio. If all you're testing is the same records that the majors are giving you, that's what you're going to play. That's the example when Lecrae sold 78,000 records his first week, you know, a year and a half ago, and he wasn't getting anything except airplay from a couple of stations across the country. You know, but he had a strong fan base. One time Lecrae tweeted something for me, it crashed my site, because everybody that follows him, they're loyal, they are real responsive to their audiences.
They're like that country. They're like that country music audience. You know.
Absolutely.
They are dedicated and devoted.
I'm sorry. I was just going to say real quick, the gatekeepers for the label, the gatekeepers for radio, which are program directors, I think the gatekeepers who has the responsibility to decide what gets through the door, what comes through the filter, you have a responsibility too to have a little more of an open mind. And that's how those type of things happen. So,
or perhaps an open mouth.
At the end of the day, you gotta be a little more open and not just, oh, this doesn't sound like such and such. This is the hot flavor of the month. This is the sound of the month. You know, you have to be open, because that's where new talent is able to breathe and get in.
Do program directors have, urban program directors have any power anymore?
Oh, that's a whole nother show.
Okay, I was going to say, it's like how much can they say? It's like if they were to keep that, okay, I'll play it. that's in. Another thing I want to talk about is a segue into promotional, what I call promotional sabotage. Now, Dwayne, you do a lot of independent promotion, and we've all been around promotion. What are some of the biggest mistakes that you see? Because I always get asked by new artists, why can't my record? They still think that being on the radio is what they want the most. Why? What are some of the biggest mistakes that you see young artists make in promoting? I'm going to say what I see first. They find somebody without doing their research. They find an independent promoter who charges them a crazy price.
You're listening to Radio Facts Radio Show, brought to you by RadioFacts.com, your online information station.
And this is the number one complaint I get from all the promoters. The person does not do the job. They lose most of their budget. Then they go to the right person to make up for what the first person did.
The biggest thing I see and this is something that Paul Porter and I always discuss, is that the independent guys don't have a plan.
Mm-hmm.
They literally start spending money. They start shooting videos. They start putting records out, and samples aren't cleared. They don't have publishing set up. They start spending a whole lot of money, and they don't have a plan about what their intent is. Mm-hmm. Whether they try to get their attention up a major label.
They don't have money.
they don't have money.
Video and music.
Mm-hmm.
And they think they can tweet their way to success.
So they don't have a plan. They don't know if they want the attention of a label. They don't know if they're trying to sell it on an independent level. They haven't even asked themselves a simple question of what's my plan? What's my goal? What's my objective? And if you don't have a plan, then anything else that you do from that point forward, it's gonna crash and burn.
Be swaying with the wind. Every time somebody tells you something, you're going to think that's a great idea, and you're going to go down that road, and then you 10 steps further behind than where you were trying to get to in the first place.
Well, it also appears they want to get on World Star Hip Hop. So, any other promotional sabotage? I mean, what else, Jamila, what have you seen from, like, gospel artists, for example?
I mean, honestly, it's the same thing. It's the same thing in gospel, urban, and hip hop. People do not have a plan. And then they go and they hire somebody who has, number one, taken all their money, not giving them any results, and then they come to you and they need you to make a miracle happen. It's really the same structure. Unfortunately, people, they make their music, it might be good, but they, like Dwayne said, they do not have a plan, and that's the worst thing that you can do. You need to do your research.
Well,
find out who is who, find out who has a good track record, and then devise your plan from there.
But I was going to say, how do they do that? I mean, a new artist that doesn't know anybody, how do you find, you know, a good independent promoter?
I think you have to do your research. Like, just like anything else, just like you're researching what kind of mic you want in your studio, and you're researching what kind of, you know, what you want your album to be. You have to do your research. I mean, they're out there, and it's about networking, just like anything else. You have to do your research to find out. And instead of just saying, I'm going to hire this person because somebody told me, why don't you find out if they have a track record? Why don't you find out their trail of success. What have they actually done, and what successful campaigns have they run, and, you know, how did they do with their last few clients, and call people and get references instead of just, oh, my boy told me this was you were the person, and that could be the absolute wrong person, and then you at a loss.
You know, I'm putting myself
plus
in
the
it.
Fact that, plus the fact that there's still a lot of groundwork and a lot of things you need to do before you even get to a radio level. And a lot of these guys don't even have that. I mean, I'm talking to guys who haven't even set up a Twitter account. They're trying to go to radio on their major urban station in their market, and they don't even have a Twitter account for their artists.
Some radio stations don't have a Twitter account. Some radio stations don't have a Twitter account.
I agree with or tag on with what Dwayne is saying, because I remember when I started in the business over 20 years ago that promoters were creative in their campaigns. They sent clever little promotional items. You know, they had a campaign going. They didn't just run to radio, but they did street promotions. They did record store promotions. I mean, so to me, I think a lot of the promoters today, they either don't have the budget or they lack creativity.
Final subject, Paul, before we close, wanted to get some more information from you. We got a lot of requests for the FM, low power FM stations. And I was wondering if you can give a brief synopsis. I know you've talked about it over the last couple of shows, but a brief synopsis of how, for example, people can begin the process.
Well, the unfortunate thing, the FCC has done in the past year and a half, they were giving out notices that they were allowing low power FM frequencies. And I think the final date was October 30th that all the applications had to be submitted. And they were giving out so many frequencies. It's not going to happen for another 2-3 years at least.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a great group that will give you information on it. They will walk you through the process, Prometheus, just like it sounds, in Philadelphia. And there's another guy I tell everybody to talk to. He's my partner for my station in Orlando. He's the first brother in the country to have a low-power FM, Paul Billings. He's at WUVS in Muskegon, Michigan. And he has helped a lot of people get licenses. Tony Gray, he has about 10 LPFMs that are not on the air, but he's got licenses for, and they're inexpensive in terms of $10,000-$15,000. You could be in a major urban market with, you know, a 30-40 mile radius for a radio station, and that's not going to happen anytime soon.
Right. And you have one, correct?
Yep, it's coming on. We'll be on air by the springtime.
And what about
in Orlando?
And Jamila, you were working on one?
Yep, I'm starting the process. So I'm definitely going to reach out to some of your resources too to try to help me along while I'm, you know, making my daily living. But that's something that I always want.
Hopefully it will happen in the next couple of years, because everybody's definitely trying to, you know, do their own thing. And, of course, they're looking at the success of some of the stations, like Steve Hegwood. So,
yeah.
Hegwood. Mm-hmm.
Well, there's another Spectrum broadband thing. They're giving out, you know, and those are on repeaters. Some more signals are going to be available, but there's going to be an auction coming up in this calendar year. And Prometheus, you can ask those same questions or just find me on raprehab.com, and, you know, I'll try to push you in the right direction, because the more of us that become owners, the better the game gets.
Mm-hmm. Now, Paul, before we close, Paul, what is your format going to be?
It's going to be music talk. It's going to be Malcolm X. It's going to be everything that normal radio isn't.
Okay.
You know, I'm not going to be, you know, a blind to BDS or what's supposed to be hot. It's, you know, it's really taking radio back to when black radio was real community. And I think that's what LPFMs have to do. They sort of have to lock into the market. I've been up to Muskegon with Paul's station, and they do everything.
The Radio Facts Radio Show is brought to you by, you know, RadioFacts.com. Your online
everybody in that city
station.
Knows that radio station. It's not for banners or parties. They really do community things, and that's what I want to do.
And they tap into the smaller advertisers that are within range, correct? It's like where the majors won't.
Yeah, but there's a lot of grant money out there, too, that, you know, you can get a $100,000 grant. And, you know, but it is local, and no, you're not going to make $10 million, but you can do quite all right, and it's quite inexpensive.
Thanks for listening to the Radio Facts Radio Show, brought to you by RadioFacts.com. My name is Kevin Ross. I'm the host of the show, and I'd like to thank my special guest host, Paul Porter, Jamila Muhammad, the poetess, and Dwayne McCleary. Please join us next week, and if you have any questions or concerns, you can respond to kevin@radiofacts.com. Once again, thanks for listening.
The Radio Facts Radio Show is brought to you by RadioFacts.com, your online information station.